Good morning. I'm Tim Morrison, your host for Right Here, Right Now, a weekly internet radio show in which we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. Right Here, Right Now is the newest of internet radio offerings on Business Radio X in Atlanta. In fact, so new that this is the first edition of the show, and my co-host for the program is Stone Payton. To remember, Stone, you graciously invited me to the airways back in October when you interviewed me on High Velocity Internet Radio. Then you allowed me to be a guest host for a special edition of High Velocity Radio, and look at where I am now.
It was all part of an elaborate plan, man. I got you in my clutches, and here you are hosting your own show. This is going to be a blast. We're going to be talking to people that have written books planning to write books.
That's right.
We're going to learn about why and how. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, man.
I sure hope so. That's what I plan for it to be. And, gee, aren't you one of my people, too? You're in my clutch. I'm helping you write, aren't I?
And the check's in the mail.
Yeah, it is. That's great. Well, Stone, we've been talking with my guests. I've got three guests this morning. They're all business professionals. They're all authors. And most important, they're friends of mine. We've worked together in various capacities. And what I plan to do this morning is we're going to start with them individually. And I'll talk with each one of them for about 10 minutes. And then we'll do a little round robin, okay? So I want to start with Vanessa Lowry. She's a multi-passionate author, entrepreneur, speaker, graphic designer, and marketing consultant. And she created the cover design and layout for my most recent book, Writing Secrets, Essential Steps to Discover How to Start. So Vanessa's been a big help for me in terms of what I've done with my books. Vanessa, it is so good to have you here. And you are author of two books, right?
Tim, it is great to be here with you and Stone today, and I'm so excited to be on your first show. Yes, I have authored two books. 30 Days of Gratitude is the first book, and then my second book just came out in January of this year, and it's Improv to Improve Your Business.
Goodness. What was the trigger point that moved you to write a book, or both of them for that matter?
Well, I love to do things collaboratively with other people. And so both of my books are collaborative efforts with friends and other business professionals. 30 Days of Gratitude was one that I wrote a couple of years ago. And I had just come through a time that I had to close a business that I had run for a number of years. And it was and the economy was tanking. And it was a very discouraging time for a lot of people. And one of my main reasons for doing 30 Days of Gratitude was because I know that when I personally focus on gratitude and the things in my life that are abundant and are plentiful, more of that comes. And so I wanted to have a vehicle to do that and encourage others to do that as well. So since this book launched in November of 2009, we've had about 2,000 people that have either downloaded the book for free at daysofgratitude.com or they have become a fan. They've liked our fan page on Facebook, which we post, one of my co-authors posts a daily inspirational quote on that page. So we've got about 1,500 people that have liked our Facebook page. So that's really, that's kind of the background behind Days of Gratitude, was that it was something to really help me, but to help other people as well.
Now, you have two co-authors with that book, right?
I do. I have Dr. Robin Kirby and then my good friend Carolyn Buttram. They both co-authored that book with me, and it was an example of a book when an idea comes together and happens very quickly. So from the point that I had the idea for the book until it was completely finished was less than a month, which I don't recommend.
Oh, man.
That's really very
I don't either. Goodness, it took me at least 4, 5, 6 months to write my book. So,
but the 30 Days of Gratitude is just short exercises, 30 daily gratitude exercises. So the writing is actually a small part of the book, where your book is much more detailed in the writing. And my second book took longer to write.
Yeah, second book, Improv to Improve Your Business, that's all yours, right?
Well, it's another collaborative effort, but it was my idea, and I gathered the people together to do it. I took an improv class several years ago, and the reason that I took the class is because I saw a presentation by the instructor at a business function talking about how you could use the principles of improv in your business. And it immediately clicked with me. I just thought it was fascinating how these principles of improv could help you listen better, could help you come up with better ideas, more creative ideas, could help you have more fun in the process. And so I took an 8-week course with Blank Stage Productions, which is in Marietta, Georgia. And as part of taking the course, I met a lot of other small business owners and business professionals that were also taking the course and seeing how they could implement that.
I got to interrupt you there. That's when I think of improv, I think of Saturday Night Live and all that crazy nonsense. And we're talking about business people, serious business people, taking improv to improve their business.
Exactly. And so that's really why I wanted to write this book, because there's so many business professionals that have taken improv and seen how it really accelerates their business, that I thought this would be good information for other business professionals to have, and to see how improv could help them, how they might want to search out improv courses to take. But we talk in the book about the Ten Commandments of improv, which are kind of some universal principles of improv, and some of them are things like listen. And so improv teaches you to be very specific in the way that you listen, so that you're not ahead of the people that you're interacting with. So it helps with communication on a very fundamental level. It also helps you, one of the other principles is have fun. So it lets you look for ways to have fun in everything that you're doing in business, which I think is really key. You know, there's so much of what we do in business that can be kind of drudgery. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you can look for ways to be creative about the way you approach it and the way that you're looking at your perspective of what you're doing in business, it really changes the whole dynamic of business and makes it a much more exciting place for everybody that's involved.
Well, Stone, you've got to love those kinds of phrases. You're Mr. Improv yourself, aren't you?
Well, I don't plan very much, if that's what you mean.
Oh, yeah. That's it.
Well, now, Tim is physically thumbing through this book. So we know it's a physical book. Your first book was an e-book.
It's also a physical book.
But oh, both of them. Yeah. Okay. But so help me think through, describe, when and how does it make sense to have an e-book and the physical book and that decision process?
Well, for the 30 Days of Gratitude, we wanted to distribute it as a free book. And so because of that, it made more sense to do it as an e-book. But then we started getting requests from people that like to have a hardcover book in their hand. And so we actually had some produced as a hardcover book. But primarily the people that have seen our 30 Days of Gratitude book have downloaded it at daysofgratitude.com. And we wanted it to be something that could be expanded out to as many people as possible. And the interesting thing is that we've all used our own networks to distribute it, but it's expanded so far beyond that we've had downloads from all over the world, places like Malaysia and New Zealand and Croatia and Indonesia, places that none of us have connections. And so it's fascinating to see the power of that. I know somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody, and this is really cool. Let's tell somebody else about it, kind of thing, and what that does for people. You know, we've gotten so many really wonderful comments from people. And then from a business standpoint, it's given us access to over 2,000 people that we didn't have access to before, because we've made this available to people as a freebie.
So. And it got you a spot on Right Here, Right Now Radio. What
well,
else you
like
want,
that.
Egg in your beer?
we like that. Well, you know,
it just
Vanessa,
gets better and better.
Well, that answer, your comment, brings up one of the things that I know is a benefit of writing, that if we write and get published in some fashion, that we can reach corners of the world that we never dreamed of or even anticipated. And you're living, breathing proof of that.
Exactly. Exactly. In fact, I just had a conversation yesterday with one of your clients that you had referred to me that talking about, you just don't know what that's going to open up for you down the road. You can anticipate what you think a book is going to do, but then it's going to open doors that you just really don't have any idea until you start on that journey, until you proceed along on that journey, where that's going to lead you.
Sure. So. Well, let me run one more kind of hardball question by you, and that is, what benefit will people gain from purchasing and reading either of your books?
Well, the benefit from the 30 Days of Gratitude, obviously, is that as from an energetic and vibrational standpoint, as we focus on things that we want in our lives, it helps draw more of those things into our lives. So it, not only from us personally, but the people that people are attracted to that vibration that you put out. So if you can, even regardless of what challenges that are going on in your life, if you can focus on the things that you're grateful for and the things that you're thankful for and the things that make your heart sing, it changes the whole dynamic of the problems that you're facing and just makes them much easier to get through. For the improv to improve your business, you know, it really is stories of business professionals and how they have used the principles of improv to make their businesses more successful. So, you know, some of them give examples of specific exercises with improv. We've got a section in the back that actually has some sample exercises. But everybody talks about what things that learning the principles of improv have helped them do better than what they did before. And the interesting thing, too, is I posted a question on LinkedIn and posed that question of, have you ever taken improv classes? And if you did, how did that help your business? And we had over 20 people that answered that question.
Wow.
And a number of them gave me permission to include their answers in the book. So we actually have an appendix in the book
cool.
with not only the 9 co-authors that have a whole chapter, but we have an appendix section that has answers from about 20 other business professionals and their LinkedIn information so that
great.
You know, people can get in touch with them
okay.
if they want.
Well, one other question. Can you sit by while I talk to my other two guests and then we'll bring you back in later?
Absolutely. I can't wait to hear about Kevin and
well,
Joe and
before,
their book.
Before I go on to them, let me give you the chance to plug your stuff. If my listeners want a copy, what do they do?
Well, you can. The easiest thing to do is to come to my website, which is Connect for Leverage, and it's connect with the number 4, connectforleverage.wordpress.com. So they need to be sure and put the WordPress in there. Connectforleverage.wordpress.com. The Improv to Improve Your Business is available on Amazon. So they could go on to Amazon and just search Vanessa Lowry, Lowry, or they could search the name Improv to Improve Your Business. There is a link to the book on my website as well. For the 30 Days of Gratitude, we'd love for anybody that wants to go download that for free. And that's daysofgratitude.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Vanessa.
Thanks, Tim.
Stone, I made it through my first interview.
You know what? I wish I'd have recorded it because that was great.
Oh, darn. Well, now let's turn a little bit. I'm turning in my seat a little bit so that I can face my next guest, and that is Joe Colavito. He's the Vice President of Development for Wells Real Estate Funds. He's a highly requested conference speaker, author, and coach. And I know Joe really well because 5 years ago, I think it was, when I decided to work my business full-time, you're like my very first client, and we had a whole lot of fun working with Jelly. Then it was called Jelly Donut Discovery, wasn't it?
Yeah, it ended up being Jelly Donut Junction.
Yeah, it did. Well, Joe, I'm so glad to have you here this morning.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for inviting me. And Vanessa, I loved hearing you just talk about your life's work and listening better and having more fun. Those are two things I can resonate with.
That's awesome.
Well, I know one of the reasons I wanted you on is because when you and I first met, you were toying with 5 books, and they were all going to have sort of like a golf theme, as in the Masters golf, that kind of golf, not the Bay of Water. And as I look at what you've written, I don't see anything dealing with golf. What happened?
I met this guy, his name was Tim Morrison, and he's a writing coach.
Oh, my. My fault, huh?
And he really messed me up. No.
can you cut that, Stone?
We'll edit it out.
Thank you.
What happened is you became a blessing in my life, and you caused me to realize that all the stuff that was going in my head and going on in my heart was not one book, but mm-hmm. it was multiple books. And I actually took the next 3 months after our first conversation to just pray about and think about, okay, what am I really trying to say? And who is my audience? And which books do I want to start writing first? So I finished Jelly Donut Junction, which is a story about a grandfather taking a grandson on the quest of a lifetime,
mm-hmm.
basically because my dad loved that book, and it was a gift to him. But the message was real simple. When you look at a jelly donut, what you really want to know is what's on the inside,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we should do when we look at people as well. what's inside of them, what makes them special. And so that was just a fun little parable. And that led to my second book, The Inside Track, mm-hmm. which was building off of that theme, that instead of being a fast tracker, we should all get on the inside track and figure out what really matters in life, and it's always people. And that led to a series of interesting interviews with centenarians down in Florida and other places in the country. Centenarian, somebody over the age of 100.
Well, I had that. I'm glad you explained it for Stone, though, but thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Stone, you good now?
I'm good.
All right,
I'm
beautiful. Good. And so I interviewed these people on behalf of a friend. He was doing a project called 100. He was going to interview 100-year-olds and seek their wisdom. And along the way, I met a dozen of them and found out that five of them were still working more than 30 hours a week.
Working.
Real job.
Man.
And that caused me to pause. And I said, okay, somebody here is not viewing work the right way, and I'm going to go ahead and guess it's me.
I like that idea.
And so I started out with a simple question, how do you view work?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked that to kindergarten through seventh graders at a small school. I went out and asked that to people in the workforce. I went out and asked that to these centenarians, and I came away with the conclusion that most of us had a flawed view of work and what its purpose was. And so that led to my third book, which you're holding in your hand, which is called Job Track to Joyride. How do we get off the job track where work is work and a job is a job? And how do we get on to the joyride, which is where we go out and we just post a question on LinkedIn and see what comes back.
That's great. If you don't mind, what I'd like you to talk a little bit more about, and you've already done that, but that is you came to me with these ideas for books. These are not those ideas.
Yeah, we're a long way from the golf course right now.
Yes, we are. And see, what I find significant about that is so often clients will come to me and say, I know the title of my book and I know what I'm going to write about. And my immediate reaction, although I don't say it, is, ooh, you've just shut out all kinds of possibilities. What was the easiest, the toughest, the whole whatever in that process of this is what I want to write and reaching to the point of, oh, this is what I should write.
Let's just go back to the very first poignant lesson that you taught me that caused me to pause for 3 months, and that was, Joe, what I'm going to do for you in this process is I'm going to teach you to not write with your head, but to go ahead and write with your heart.
Oh my. I did do that, didn't I?
You did
do
that.
And I still do that with everybody.
And yeah. I'm forever grateful for that. And so what that caused me to do was say, okay, my head's got a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And I'm always overthinking. I'm always overplanning, unlike you, Stone. And I've got visions for, you know, the 19th book that I'm going to write in 2027.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to really stop and say, what's really going on in my life and what's really going on in my heart? And does any of that matter to anybody else?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, how do I best package that so that it would both be fun to read and entertaining? And if they chose to, they could get a life message out of it. And
how did this, you're vice president for development of Wells Real Estate, and you were a recruiter placing people. How do we go from that into writing this kind of stuff?
Yeah, well, it's been a journey of the heart, and the simple story is in 2000, a good friend of mine who was a colleague when I was an executive recruiter, and I was all about me, and I was all about how I could use you and other people to get more income into my bank account and get my golf handicap lower, because apparently those are the measures of a true man. And after
of course, I'm in trouble. I don't golf.
After I had done that for a while, I realized that what I had come up with was empty.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went from empty to, okay, how do you find fulfillment and how do you really find true life and how do you find joy? And it's always going to be by investing your life in other people. And so as I went from being self-centered to being others-centered, this journey led me to say, okay, what is it that I think people are struggling with the most?
Mm-hmm.
And it was two things. One, I think they get caught in the performance trap. You know, we have to have A's in school, we have to get to college, we have to get a master's, we have to get a PhD, we have to, you know, climb the ladder of success. And having gotten there at the age of 36 and at the top of the income hill and at the, you know, the top of kind of the golf hill, you know, at least for an amateur, I thought, is this it?
Wow.
I mean, this is it, right? Because if this is it, I can't imagine doing this for 20 more years.
My goodness. Now, he sounds like a good candidate for high velocity, Stone.
So throughout this whole process, what did you find the most rewarding and what did you find challenging, if not downright frustrating?
Prior to meeting Tim, the downright frustrating was I wrote for 3 years, at least five or six different beginnings or all the way to the middles of books.
Mm-hmm.
and none of them were coming out. And I went and gave a testimony at a small pizza and sub shop over here in Alpharetta, and a woman said, I need to introduce you to a friend of mine, Tim Morrison, and he'll help you through that. So we talked within a couple of days, and he did help me through that. And so the most frustrating part was writing for 3 years and having never written anything that anyone else would read. That was frustrating and easily could have given up. But there's an author out there by the name of Andy Andrews, and he wrote a book called The Traveler's Gift. This is my plug for you, Andy. And Andy wrote one word in the endorsement to the book he gave me. The inscription said, persist.
Wow. Persist.
And every time I'd get frustrated, I'd go back and I'd open up Andy's book called The Traveler's Gift, and I would say, okay, persist. In other words, write another day. Try writing another day. And so that was the frustrating part. Now, the joyful part was having met the centenarians and realized that they thought that work was actually their source of joy. It was actually the fountain of youth. Investing their life's work in other people was what really mattered, and it was keeping them alive. I thought, okay, let's just see how that plays out in the workplace. And you mentioned writing your book in 30 days and you wouldn't recommend it. I never intended to write a book in 30 days and I wouldn't recommend it either. But when something really comes from your heart instead of your head, it's amazing how quickly it can go onto a laptop.
Yeah. Now, you've written all three of your books are like parables or novels.
Yes.
That intrigues me. I have never considered even attempting something like that. What was that like? Do you tell bedtime stories to your kids? Is this an outgrowth of that or what?
I'm definitely a born storyteller, but what I found is that the parable was powerful because it allowed other people to go into that story and find themselves in any or all of the characters and decide at which point in the story it's them. Mm-hmm. Or it's the them that they don't want to be, or the them that they do want to be.
Uh-huh.
And so I use that, but if you really read those books closely and you know my life story, those are autobiographical.
Are they?
Yeah, I just hid behind a character. His name is William C. Moore, and when you shorten it, it's Will He See More? And he will. He'll see a lot
more. I remember that conversation from a while back. Well, I'm going to do to you what I did to Vanessa, and that is we're going to move on, but first, how people get your book?
It's real easy. You can go to www.joecolavito.com, and Colavito is C-O-L-A, like Coca-Cola, and V-I-T-O, so joecolavito.com.
Life in Cola, right? Something like that. Thanks, Joe. You're willing to sit by?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Two down. I'm on a roll. All right. Well, Kevin Keles is my third guest this morning, and Kevin's an amazing individual. He put up with me for almost 2 years. He and I were colleagues together serving a hospice in Metro Atlanta. But Kevin really specializes in bringing care, compassionate care, to people with chronic diseases and who are in the process of transitioning. He loves to explore the existential issues surrounding death and dying. Kevin has written nearly a dozen articles, including Embracing the Elderly Patient's Wish to Die and Power Patterns Within Professional Relationships. And Kevin, I remember when you were starting to write this book, Spiritual Care to Elderly and Dying Loved Ones.
I think it had, about maybe 30 pages of writing at the time.
Yeah.
It took over, contrary to my colleagues here, it took me probably about 5 years to really complete. But there was something good that came out of that because I was able to really blossom it and create more ideas and kind of be able to meet some of the people that I served in the past.
Well, and I remember when you did start writing this because you and I were talking. I had three books out at the time, and you and I would talk about writing, and you were excitedly nervous about the whole process.
I did not graduate with honors in high school for English. It took a long road. I really had to put a lot of thought, writing and rewriting and rewriting. It was really a long process, very challenging for me in lots of ways. And I think I had to invest some money, some time. I even went to a writer's conference, which was a real big boost because there's where I met Mim Rivas, who is a big contributor to some of the things we've read, such as Pursuit of Happiness. She was a big part of that. But I took the chapter that had dementia on it. And what I ended up doing is I asked her for some ideas. And as a new writer, I wasn't sure where to really go or if I had anything. I had great ideas, I thought, but
how to put it
into pen
and
how to translate that so that the community would embrace that was another thing. So she read it. She said, Kevin, you've got something here that's really hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was real exciting to just
get... What I like about what you've said, Kevin, and I want my listeners to pick up on, and that is you have ideas... But they're not necessarily the way they should be presented. You have to think about it, maybe talk with other people to get some clarity and direction.
Right, right. And that's why the book, I think, is really captivating because it's in narrative form, and it really has people who struggle through the things that we struggle every day about. I mean, we talk about death and dying, for example, you know, periodically, and we'll say things like, well, you know, we're all going to die sometimes. But when you see it in action every day, and when you see people going through that transition process where they're closing the chapter of their lives, that's a whole nother story. And so for me, having worked in hospice for 12 years and seeing that, it's reshaped me and remolded me.
And you're not dealing just with the person who's actually transitioning. You're dealing with the family, the extended family, all the issues that are out there.
Right, right. There's really... There are so many people that are involved in this process. Everyone is asking questions whenever there's a loved one that's passing away. Questions about what do I do with my life now? Where am I going? Who am I without my loved one? So these questions are really very penetrating. And so for us, this ends up being a very, very existential factor.
Everyone we've spoken to this morning has indicated that they got some third-party input, including you, but it occurs to me you could get a lot more help than you really need and maybe not from all the right people. How do you, what kind of filter do you run that input through to make sure you come out with a good product?
Well, I think for me, maybe there were some things that I didn't know as a writer, but there were things about this writing that kept me mesmerized, and that was the theme. The theme of what I was writing about was about people who I served, the people who were struggling like you and I do, and then what that struggle meant to me. Because as a spiritual care coordinator or as a hospice chaplain, those questions came home with me. Those experiences of people's lives came home with me. And I knew that we're in a society where society really prefers to shun those questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't see on an average day, you know, commercials about coffins or how to write a power of attorney or a living will. You see everything about how to stay alive, how to stay young, how never to look at death in the eye. And I think the theme was what really kept me going.
What was the most challenging part for you in putting this together?
Really was a combination. There was times that I struggled because I wanted to capture both audiences. I wanted to capture the professionals who I deal with all the time, and then I wanted to capture the layperson. I wanted to be able to speak to the mother who's out there who's struggling, or the father, or the siblings, when they have questions about, when do I put mom in a nursing home, or should I, or how do I live with that guilt? So I wanted to combine those two, and I really didn't know how. And that was one challenge, and I ended up kind of integrating the two because even though they're separate worlds, they also have a lot alike.
I'm reading on the back cover of your book, it's divided into three parts, tools for the caregiver, spiritual care to the dying, and spiritual care after death.
Yeah.
So you really have a broad audience for this book. You were just alluding to that, but it's more than it's just for the professional.
Right.
The people, the home, regular folk can relate to this, right?
Absolutely. Really, I've had people who have read the book who have said to me, Kevin, I wish I had this book when my husband was dying because it shared some ideas that I could have implemented. Or I've had one lady who, she was very kind to say, you know, I felt very guilty. I never really approached my mother with the question of death. Like, Mom, what do you want us to do? How are you? Are you afraid? And she said, after reading the book, she felt a sense of relief. And her response to that was that she felt that she wasn't alone, that there are other people who were struggling with similar questions. So it's a book that can bring people together in different ways, including as we all struggle with those existential questions.
And I really celebrate that. As you know, I came out of 25 years in ministry, and one of my specialties in that time was dealing with death and dying, and I created programs for children and youth, and I was surprised when the adults of the churches came to me and said, okay, we need one of those. And I said, but. And so I'm very much aware of how people don't like to deal with that issue. And then to watch you at work and to see your book warms my heart. It really does that you deal with that. Now, you actually share stories from your work. This is not all theoretical. This is down in the dirt, should we say.
And I even follow some families after the fact of, you know, when their loved one has passed away. I've gone back maybe 2 years and maybe even 3 years to just hear their story again, to see where are you at, and what does the loss of a loved one actually do to us as human beings? And so I think it was a real nice, and that's why I say, even though it took me 5 years, the transitioning of the whole book just began to blossom in ways I wasn't intending to either.
But that's an important point, and I'm glad you brought that up, that sure, we can, I've had clients that knock a book off in 30 days, 6 months, but 5 years is not unusual. In fact, a lot of the big name, best-selling, real, honest-to-God best-selling authors will take years to write because it's important. You're putting you out on the table, in the pages, and all of that.
Right.
The other thing I want to lift up, and I hope you don't mind, is you mentioned earlier, you know, struggling with the actual writing because you were not the best student or whatever. But what people may not know is that you're also bilingual, and that English was not necessarily your first language.
Right.
And I remember conversations we had in which you would be saying, I can say it over here in Spanish, but now to get it into English. Did you ever reach a point of being really comfortable with that?
You know, that probably was the biggest factor. Just the way that the Spanish dialogue goes is different the way you orchestrate a sentence or something. But I didn't even follow the rules of class when it came to Spanish. I spoke Spanglish, you know. It was a combination of all sorts of things. So I really had things mixed up. But I think in part my thought processes, even though I think primarily in English, I think my thought processes were somewhat influenced by that. Because I could tell that there were times I would put a thought and it would look like how I sometimes think, and it doesn't necessarily fit the way that we're taught in English.
And that's when you having an editor and someone like that to help you would clear that all out.
Right.
Well, that's great.
Right.
Well, the time is on you now, and I'm going to open it up to all three of us, but Kevin, my listeners want a copy of your book. What do they do?
Okay, it's available at Amazon.com, or they can go to my website, www.kevinkuiles.com. That's KevinKuiles.com. And I think it's a book that I feel would really reach a very broad audience, those who are religious, how to reach a diverse culture, how to reach people who don't claim any kind of theistic model. I think one of the things when I go speaking is some people who approach me come to me either saying, Kevin, I was wondering which direction to go now in this part of my life, and by hearing you, I realize that there may be a direction that's worthwhile.
Oh, that's great.
And I've had even people, one of the things I really wish to do is to validate people's spirituality, whatever that is. And I've had people who are atheists and agnostics come up to me and say, thank you for not criticizing us. Thank you for embracing us. And so my audience is real large, so people can get really a lot of good pieces of information.
And I'm so glad to hear you say that, because that is needed, and especially at that time of life for everyone.
Exactly.
Well, I'm going to take a risk here, but I don't think it's too big, knowing all three of you. Would any of you like to ask one of the others a question?
I would like to just make a comment, and I was mentioning this to Kevin as we were coming in, and he was telling me about his book, but My dad passed away just a couple weeks ago, and he was in hospice for the last, you know, about 8 days before he transitioned. And it was such an incredible experience to have that support and to have that care. And it made it so much more joyful than it would have been otherwise. So I just want to say thank you for the book that you've written. I think that for people that aren't aware of hospice and the resources that are out there to get you more comfortable with this transition of death that we all experience, it's a wonderful resource for people to be able to do that, because it's so helpful to kind of know what to expect, but to be able to see the beautiful part of that as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm glad you had a positive experience,
yeah,
a comforting experience.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful.
So I would be interested to know from everyone here, what kind of impact, if any, has writing the book actually had on bottom line and business? And I know that may not have been the only reason that you engaged in that activity, but has it had a genuine impact on the bottom line? And if so, why? And if not, you know, maybe why not?
Tim mentioned in my introduction that I'm a requested conference speaker. And so, as many people know, you have a book, they ask you to speak, you speak, and they ask if you have a book, you know, and you're not really sure which one happens first. But I have two keynotes that I give, the first called The Inside Track, which is my second book, and the second called Job Track to Joyride. And so, without a doubt, having those books available to be able to encourage someone at the end, that's really the value of them to me. Is to be able to give them an inscription that says, you know, you play a vital role in the story, or keep leading others on the inside track, or glad to see you found joy in your job, go give it to others. And, you know, to be able to have a book that's almost like a leave behind,
right,
that lets them catch another part of who you were and why you wrote it, that to me is the bottom line impact. It's not dollars, it's touched lives, which is what Kevin's doing and what Vanessa's doing, and it's all built off that gratitude theme.
Absolutely. Well, and for me, it's made a huge impact in my business. I actually do a lot of work with authors that are self-publishing. So by having two books that I've published myself, it just gives people an example that I know what I'm talking about. Not only do I do this work for other people, but I've done it for myself as well. But one of the key examples that I'd like to share is that for a number of years, I did lots of networking, like probably 6 to 8 events a month. Maybe more than that, because I was in a weekly group and then a monthly group and a couple of other ones that were just kind of drop-in ones. And so I did a lot of networking and did a lot of, you know, one-on-one coffees with people. And it was a lot of time. And so what I found is, since I've had my books out, I've done a lot more of this kind of thing, where I've been able to be guests on radio shows, and I've been able to be speakers at business events, and so I've been able to get in front of groups of people where their focus is actually on me, instead of being one of a mix of a lot of people at a networking event where you kind of get lost in the crowd because everybody's trying to remember everybody's 60-second, you know, infomercial. So it's been a much more effective way to be in front of my specific market and attract the specific clients that I want to work with less time on my part.
Kevin, it'd be kind of hard for you in your position, but yet it's got to have had an impact.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, I'm really. I kind of try to. I kind of echo what Joe was saying. Really, that there was a time when I really wanted to reach an audience, and I wanted to reach a group of people, and I didn't have the time of day. There was no opening, and then after getting the book, it opened the doors, and opening the doors opened further doors.
Sure.
I also, one of the things that I did to do that was try to kind of put myself out there by really writing some more articles and kind of stretching the audience a little bit, or talking to chaplains and talking to counselors and that kind of thing. And so that's kind of opened the door for me further.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Tim, could I just ask Kevin a quick question?
Absolutely.
You mentioned that there was this theme, and that these questions that you were grappling with at work and your serving of people would kind of cling to you, and you'd bring them home, and then you measure the impact that had on your life. Talk to me a little bit more about that.
And I appreciate that question sincerely, because it really talks, it really captures, you'll see my heart in this book. You know, I said that before the people that I served died, they taught me. And after they died, they taught me much more. Mm-hmm. The idea was that I grappled with that, really went through a time of lots of anxiety in my own life. When you fall asleep after dealing with people who are going through a lot of struggles, saying goodbye to their lives and the world that we live in, which is always goal-oriented. But when you have to close that chapter, it leaves you with something. And I struggled a lot, and it made me ask questions. Here I am at 48. And I've asked a lot of questions. What is it like to leave my family when mm-hmm. it's time? How am I going to die? What am I going to do when I no longer can write? Or when my cognitive levels begin to decline? All those factors come into play. And so, yeah, those things really stayed with me. And I think they've made me more intentional. So that when I sit on the bed of my little daughter when I'm waking her up, I know that moment is going to end one day. So I want to take advantage of that.
That's pretty powerful. Well, you know, the clock is on us. Thank you, Stone, for co-hosting and keeping me on track. And I want to say thank you to my three wonderful guests, Vanessa Lowry, Joe Colavito, and Kevin Keelays. This has been fun and enlightening really for me. Good. I thank you to the listeners for joining us today for the very first edition of Right Here, Right Now. We broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. You can find us at businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today if everything works well. I'm your host, Tim Morrison of Right Here, Right Now. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.